I've already spoken like a spoke holds its tension. Like it's together that the spokes are the invention of a wheel, that a wheel is only as round as its tension, that a wheel is a round invention. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she rides. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she rides. She rides. Fragile's bodies soaring through the city on two-wheel cycles through the traffic and the people. Steering clear of the car doors on the potholes and the streetcar tracks. Tuned in to my own personal soundtrack. I'm singing out loud as I pedal through the streets, spinning to the rhythm of 4.5 million heartbeats. And I tend to miss my turn-offs when I'm tuned into my turn-ons. I tend to write sentences that turn into run-ons. I tend to recycle the same thoughts that cycle round. The way I recycle the same stretches of ground on my two-wheel bicycle.
Good afternoon, Montreal. You are listening to CKUT at 90.3 FM. This is now time for a movement museum. It's 2:05 in the afternoon. My name is Allison Burns, and I'm here with Jen Doan. And what you just heard was from the show Spin, or the album Spin, by Evelyn Perry and Brad Hart. And it's one of the shows, one of the four paid shows that is as a part of the Edgy Women Festival. This is starting today, if you don't know about it yet. It's the 19th edition of the Edgy Women's Festival, produced by Studio 303. It runs from today, March 15th, to April 1st. There are plenty of free or by donation events, and also four presentations. Where you do have to buy a ticket, but they all look super interesting. The whole idea of the festival is to present unconventional and uncompromising projects whose content is creative as the forms they take. This annual festival celebrates a variety of feminist perspectives through fun, experimental, and community-building artistic events. And we are fortunate enough to have in studio today three lovely ladies who are participating in the festival. We're going to start off by introducing Miriam Genister, who is the not only the director of the Edgy Women's Festival, but also of Studio 303, and she organizes the Meow Mix events as well. She basically works towards the evolution of performing arts, feminism, and queer culture with her work. So, hello, Miriam.
Hi.
How are you today?
Pretty good.
Is there anything I failed to add in your introduction or in the introduction of the festival itself?
I don't think so. You did a really great job.
Well, thank you very much. I tried. And the other two ladies who are here with us today are participating in one of the shows being presented as part of the festival, Insecube, which is described as a mother, a sister, an actress, a courtesan, a burlesque queen, a contortionist, a whipcracker, a singer in a glass-bottomed boat. So definitely intriguing right off the bat, and even more so when we hear about who these lovely ladies are. I'm going to introduce first Andrianne Leclerc, who is from Quebec, and she ran away to join the circus at age 9. She performed at the National Circus School. She's also performed in festivals, modern and traveling circuses, German cabarets, conceptual performances. My goodness. And she's currently working on her master's degree in dramatic arts at ECAM. And from time to time, she collaborates with the Unsettlers. So hello, Andrianne.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Wonderful. Thanks for being here. Do you have something to add to your bio that I haven't mentioned?
No, I would like to take some off.
Are you getting shy now?
Yes, a little bit.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Are you from Quebec?
I'm from Gatineau.
Oh, yeah.
Gatineau.
Right.
Very nice. And last but not least, we have Holly Gauthier-Frankel, who is a Montreal-born and raised singer, writer, actor, and burlesque performer who's been working in the industry for 23 years now. She has lent her voice to a Academy, Emmy award-winning cartoons and hundreds of other shows and albums. Her now famous burlesque alter ego is Miss Sugarpuss, which you may have heard before more than the name Holly, because she has been considered one of the top 10 most desirable women in several of the Best of Montreal categories or votes in various years. Oh, she also performs with this character in Toronto, Chicago, Montreal, New York, and Tokyo. So hello, Holly.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you?
Very happy. Very excited to be surrounded by you ladies.
I guess I want to ask Miriam first. I'm really interested, actually, in the history. Back to, you know, the start of Edgy Women. What was it about? What was the drive behind Edgy Women when it first started?
So funny, people always ask me this, and I'm so, like, I feel like I'm a person that doesn't actually have a lot of drive. It's not true, but a lot of the projects that I'm involved in appear to have been born accidentally and then take on a life of their own, or, you know, and Edgy is one like that. It was just some women from New York and from Montreal on a shared bill at a Studio 303 show. The co-director at the time tried to find a name for the show and said, called it Women from the Edge. And then some of the same women came back the year later and something similar happened again. And then he said, you know, why don't you curate this, Miriam? And I said, okay, but I cannot curate a show called Women from the Edge. So I just kind of tweaked it to Edgy Women. And then
What was the big difference for you between those two titles?
I don't really know. I think it was, you know what? This was kind of at the time when Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown also was out, and Women on the Edge to me had more neurotic connotations than artistically adventurous ones.
That makes perfect sense.
I think sonically it just sounds more, it's just more catching. Edgy Women.
But then of course I was like, God, we have to have a French title. So I called it Femme au-delà, which is a bit more Twilight Zone-y, you know. And I really liked that title, but it just didn't stick. And Francophones called it Edgy Women. So we just, we stuck with Edgy Women. So it started just as kind of a thematic shared program at 303 and remained that way for many years until funding made itself available via the Canada Council's InterArts program. And when I went for that funding, and because I had this extra special dedicated funds, I was able to expand the festival and just start piecing together other things like professional workshops and partnering with other organizations and doing something over a longer period of time and more multidisciplinary. And then it kind of became this festival. And then 4 or 5 years later, I wasn't able to apply for that funding anymore. So now it's like, again, on a really ridiculous budget. But, for a few years, I was like, it's not really a festival. It's more like a long event. But anyway, so now it's what it is, which is a very low budget, eclectic festival that relies on a lot of partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just on to Anseline and Holly. With the work that you guys are doing and presenting in Edgy Women, I guess what I want to ask is the idea of feminism. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those concepts that even for me, like, it's very unclear, it's very gray. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ideas surrounding it, a lot of assumptions, and people definitely have a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
So in terms of your guys' work and approaching this concept and presenting that in the Edgy Women Festival, can you talk a little bit about your work in terms of that context, like, within the idea of feminism?
Well, yeah.
That's a big question.
Not really, but yes, because feminism has changed so much, and I still don't know what that even really means. I'm a woman, I'm an artist, I must make my art and my voice accessible to people or to myself. I need to put it out there. I did a minor in women's studies at McGill in 2001, and I don't even know what it meant then. I mean, it was, you know, like, I don't know. When pressed, I say, yes, I am a feminist, but that just means, I mean, to me, it just means I'm pro woman. I'm pro-expression. I'm pro-matriarchy. I actually started a blog called Matriarchy Now because I'm just so tired of all this, you know, I'm tired of stuff in the media and politics overriding everything. I mean, there's a lack of humanity. I'm a humanist. I want I want everybody's voices to be out there. But yes, for this piece, for this festival, it's so amazing to be able to bring to life a piece like Insoucube, and Andréane and I are in the process of discovering not only the piece as we go, as we create it, but ourselves as women, as artists, as people in the world. You know, we are everything all at once. So it's really an incredible chance to be able to do that on a stage in front of people who have paid money and, you know, who are going to be expecting a show. I think it's a privilege. And and hell yeah, if Edgy Women is a big fat feminist festival, and can I swear? Can I say F yeah? No, I can't. No. Allison's like, don't, please no. Don't, please don't swear. But F yes, this is, I'm a feminist, and this is a fantastic festival for this kind of show.
What about you, Adrienne?
Well, for me, I'm asking as well those questions, like what is really feminist and stuff, so... on a very personal point of view. Edgy Woman and the Meow Mix and the event of Myriam was really there to help me out to empower myself and to take a place of to speak and to be who I am. And artistically, and I don't know, I had a lot of confidence from Myriam that she believed into my vision and stuff. So I had a place to really develop and to push some borders as well, like towards contortion, because contortion was there since I'm very, very young. And so I always, like, lived with this phantasm, you know, that that contortion carry with it. So the phantasm, the erotism, the object that contortion can be on the circus scene. And so... that scene, that Edgy Woman Festival, helped me to become a woman, and then contortion take a second place, a place of I'm really interested into, like, this empty body. So I want to be first on stage and be a person that have something to say, and contortion came as une matière, or you know, something to create with. And so, yeah, so actually this piece, Insoucube, is really about, like, pushing that borders of erotism, fantasm, sensuality, and playing on those two little demons of the night that comes and play with your dreams while you're asleep. So that's really about that piece, and, you know, using this object body, or this body object, as something like if we would have choose it to be like that. So, yeah, so there's... so we are empowered through all that process.
In a very literal sense, what can we expect from the show? As far as I understand it, it's the two of you and then Lisa Gamble, your musician?
Yes. Yeah. Lisa will be on stage with us doing, I guess, some live sort of improvised stuff. I mean, there's a big flow to the piece. You'll see us running around on stage doing various acts of contortion and miscellany.
Description of the work, it very much goes into imagery and environments and whatnot. Are these things that you're creating? Suspension
of disbelief? It's based on this meeting of the audience and us on stage, and so, like, all those expectations, even, like, we push it really far on the description, everything what we can do and what we do and what we carry inside us that we don't need anything else. And so I think with the years, like, people come and have huge expectation, you know, like, towards that, and actually that's all, like, the reverse, where we want to create this relation with them that we're gonna choose when everything's gonna be out there, and, you know, guiding them to the piece, and then slowly give them some bits and there, and then they have to wait, and they have to deserve it, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, like, nothing is free, and, you know, and it started from a bit of a critic of circus, of, you know, you give it everything right away and it's just free, and why, like, for me it was just like, why bending myself, you know, why doing it all that, and even, like, for the audience, why, you know, why are you bending yourself like that, you know? So it was just like, what's the point, you know, a part of this big fantasy of just, like, for me, it was just giving too much right away. So it's just like, yeah, developing some rhythm, developing those two little character, and, you know, get to know. So there's a big... So we work on écriture scénique of the piece, and so slowly there's two little characters that came out, which are this incubus and succubus.
Yeah,
and so together they're creating this lie, actually, of what people see.
We made it kind of specific and yet vague in an expressionistic way so that people can see all the levels that we're trying to touch on, which are multiple. We're doing, you know, multiple levels of storylines and personas and archetypes and all elements of femininity and womanhood and eroticism and taboo and... darkness, you know.
Yeah, so what to expect, someone said, because we just arrived from Paris where we did a résidence de création at main d'oeuvre, mm-hmm. Supported by Triotree, well, produced by Triotree, as this piece is a commande from Myriam. And so someone said that it was a kind of a erotic clown show.
Yeah, hardcore erotic clown show. Yeah.
So where it goes, really, I mean, you know, some people thought it was very perverted. Yeah. Some people thought it wasn't at all. And some people thought it was very shocking and violent. Some people thought it was very sweet and naive.
Yeah.
So, well, it depends kind of how people will arrive in.
Depends on how pervy you are, I guess.
Yeah.
So you have to add that tag to the promo.
Yeah.
Hardcore erotic.
How pervy are you?
And yeah, so people should come and see and tell us what it is for them.
Exactly. Because, yeah, the audience is complicit in that decision as well.
Mm. Miriam, what inspired you to invite these guests to create a work?
Just because I love them so much. And I invited Andréanne to do a short piece for a cabaret a couple of years ago, and then she decided to collaborate with Holly, and I thought that they really brought out the best in each other and that there was a real electricity in their collaboration, and I really, really wanted to see more. And even the piece itself felt like the beginning of something really exciting, so I was delighted to have come across that and have that idea, because edgy women is usually... It's usually a lot more new creations, but this year, in fact, this is one of the only new creations. It's mostly work I've already seen, and that makes it a bit different this year.
Was there instruction when you commissioned the work, like, or is just by the fact that they are edgy women that?
Well, no, it was really it was just like continue working on whatever it was that you were working on, because it was really exciting. Yeah, I didn't have anything else.
I saw something
that they did, and the water theme was already there. It was already called Insecube, I think.
Okay.
And I just really, really wanted to see more. So it's the first time I've commissioned a work, actually, other than the Edgy Challenge, which is like, here's a loot bag, make a piece in a week and a half.
Does that happen every year, that challenge?
No, not this. I mean, it's happened three times, but not this year. It's a lot of work and investment, and I collaborated a lot with Nathalie Claude and Dana McLeod. They were my hosts and co-brainstormers for the event, but they're not really available this year. So,
mm-hmm. Fair enough. As far as works that you curate, that you see and invite into the festival, what are you... Yeah. Looking for, I mean, because it could be a broad category, like looking for edgy women, and I know multidisciplinary too, so it's like you're broadening it even further. How do you specify what gets in?
I have an artistic committee that helps me so that I don't feel like a complete dictator, and I don't, you know, for sure I do tend to go for similar stuff. There's always something erotic or that there's always some kind of sex, something going on in edgy women. And I think that is part of me. I mean, it's just whatever. It's something I'm interested in. But trying to break it's just something sexy and feminism don't go together a whole lot. And I would like to put them together. Mm-hmm. I would also like to put together funny and feminist, and so for me, the whole feminist context, it's not like I ask all the artists to swear allegiance to the feminist cause, but I look for work that I find feminist in a kind of unconventional way, and then I provide a context that I call feminist, because I think that then it enables a discussion and a coming together and a critical perspective. But I do want to present things that people don't normally, traditionally associate with feminist.
And so there are three other shows that are part of this festival. I know one is called Spin with Evelyn Perry, and then I believe there's Le Jebe Les Yeux. Mm-hmm. And there's one other one as well.
Le Demi-Monde. And Je Baisse Les Yeux.
Yeah, and they all look like so, like, incredibly, you know, variety, but still with the context of, you know, eroticism, sexual content. Can you talk a little bit about how those three pieces as well fit into the festival for our listeners?
Sure. I mean, this year's a little different, like I said, because it's four full-length shows. There's no cabaret or challenge, or four full-length and three quite polished shows, too, that have toured already. And three of them have a very similar theme. And Spin would be the odd one out, I'd say. Spin is really about cycling as a tool for social liberation. It's also a kind of ode to the bicycle as muse. A bicycle is used as a musical instrument on stage. And it's basically a multimedia concert. And it's really interesting, very narrative and beautiful.
And just a reminder, we heard a track from Spin at the beginning of the show. Yeah.
And then I really wanted to program Spin next year because I have a sports theme, but it wasn't possible next year, and I thought, okay, that's fine. I'll start experimenting with some of the sports themes this year. We also have a edgy hockey match later on. So, and those are kind of preparing for quite a deep investigation into sports and gender for the 20th anniversary edition. The other three pieces are Andréanne and Holly in Succube, and then two fairly theatrical pieces, one from France called Je baise les yeux, which means I F the eyes. And the other one is, and it's in Francais. And then the other one is called Les Demi-Mondes by The Scandals, who are a burlesque troupe that have pierced the theater milieu. And they've also changed their name recently to Operation Snatch.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I didn't know that.
Pretty bold.
That's, wow.
But I kept The Scandals on our promo because it works better in French and because they're just really beginning to build an audience here. And so, Les Demi-Mondes and Je baise les yeux both really look at voyeurism and the relationship between institutional art and media and sex work or sex workers, a kind of morbid, salacious fascination, but also derision. You know, there's like a major lack of respect, but an intense fascination there. And Je baise les yeux, it's a dance company, but there's not much dancing. They're really at a lecture table, and they're being interrogated by a man. These three women who are dancer choreographers but also strippers. And I know they said that, you know, since they did this piece, they've gotten so much media, and of course everyone just wants to talk about stripping, not the choreographic stuff. So it's kind of interesting because this piece is a kind of intellectualization of something erotic.
Is that a scripted piece or is it?
Yeah, it's scripted. And it's very funny. It's very French, very intellectual, very holding back. But then there's a few little demonstrations as well during the piece. So there is some dancing. And then the other one is Les Demi-Mondes, which is in English. But I think there's also video projection and dancing. And it's a bit more cabaret style. Lots of short numbers. And The Scandals, or Operation Snatch, they really have a really clear mandate with all of their productions, and their productions are really, they are to educate the public about sex work and sex workers' rights, but it's not done in a pedagogical, hit-you-over-the-head kind of way. Mm-hmm. They're super intelligent, and their work is nuanced and really hilarious and really smart. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, actually, I don't know if these two artists... Yeah, I think Gael will stay. Not her whole company, but just her to see the scandals. And I'm really interested in discussion around these two. They're coming from really different cultural contexts. It may not feel that different or seem that different, you know, oh, Montreal, Paris, but trust me. Mm-hmm. It's really, really different when it comes to this material. Mm. And very different aesthetics. And I'm really interested, and I hope that that there's discussions that arise around these pieces that I see as companion pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering for Holly and Andrian, what is your working relationship with the musician? Because you two have collaborated before on projects, mm-hmm. and when did you involve Lisa, and how does that relationship work?
We decided to get Lisa involved fairly recently, right before we went to France. I think we just kind of... I mean, it was a suggestion of Miriam's to talk to Lisa. I had known Lisa before from a totally non-musical context, as well as the musical context. But we had never worked together before, and then I guess we just wanted to explore a soundscape for such an impression-y piece with so many images. I think that was our decision. We just wanted to kind of go there.
Yeah, we're still in process to work with her, and yeah. Actually, like, so it was like a proposition of Miriam, and I think it just fit totally, and what mm-hmm. she was like proposing just somehow made sense and yeah. was really inspiring, like, and like helped us to with the imagerie mentale, and it's very visualized, mm-hmm. like creates a lot of idea mm-hmm. and movement and stuff. And but the thing what's interesting with this collaboration is that like we created this piece in Paris, and Lisa was here, so now we had 3 days like to work together, because she's gone now for 2 weeks on tour, mm-hmm. and she's coming back like two days before the premiere. So it was just like, so it helped us actually like in France really like a structure of the piece, so then when we come back in those 3 days we can be like very efficient to just say like, this is what we do. So she's having a kind of a structure to work on for the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and then, you know, she's gonna come back, and then we're gonna see how it's gonna okay. somehow unfold. But I feel that she's super professional.
Yeah, she's amazing,
great, and so there was a very good chemistry between like the three of us.
Yeah,
so I think there's so we'll see. I think it's very interesting, because it's really going to become a kind of a dialogue
yeah.
between what we do and what she does, you know, as two kind of, you know, like it's two line parallel, but that just going to intertwine and yep. become something, you know, special in between. So I think I'm very excited about, you know, yeah.
Can you explain yeah. a little bit of Lisa's work? Because just reading from her bio, she's not your conventional, you know, composer or musician. She's really experimental.
Yeah, she's very experimental. Very eclectic. She uses a lot of found objects. She uses musical saw and bicycle wheels and strange toys and bells and glasses and
a happy apple.
Happy apple?
Yeah, with those little clink clonk, those funny little apples. So it really looks like a happy. Anyway, it's a children's toy. But she uses loopers and samplers and manipulates sound and. Yeah, I mean, she's a fantastic musician. I mean, I knew her when she was a folk singer and brilliant guitarist, and she still is, but it transcends all of that, and she just makes beautiful musicscapes and soundscapes. Yeah, sort of mind-blowingly so. Mm-hmm.
So I think as our piece is as well quite unconventional,
totally.
I think, so it totally makes sense together and yeah. fits together.
Yeah, yeah.
On the note of collaboration, how do the two of you work together? Because there's not one of you does not have more power than the other in the creation process? Or?
No, well, Andrian has the conception of the piece. She always had a certain idea for it in mind, but when we first... We met on a street corner and had a very long, in-depth conversation about where we were at in terms of my burlesque. We had known each other through the burlesque world, the fringe world. We'd never worked together before, but we wanted to explore that process of being an object and objectifying yourself and being an artist and kind of putting yourself out there. And we had both come to a certain shifting point And she invited me to participate in this cabaret for Miriam. And I was thrilled because I had never met Miriam and I had never done a Meow Mix. Yet I was really implicated in burlesque and sexy stuff in Montreal. So it was really a great opportunity to have it all merge.
And so the interesting part of it is from the start, it always felt like I was the body and Holly the voice. And it's... with the time of the collaboration, it kind of slightly shifted. Yeah. So Holly really gets more into her body. And I... not yet.
You are. You're there.
No, working the voice or just sound or just like, you know, like who exteriorize like something inside.
Yeah.
So it's been like very interesting. And like Miriam approached me for this idea or, you know, initiate this project. So I think I kind of have a little bit the lead, but like I think now it's not, I don't consider that piece my piece. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, it's
no,
a piece that really goes like in between of the two of us. Like it
lives between us. It exists right here in the middle of this
in
weird
the middle
tension.
Of us. Yeah.
So strange. It's so amazing.
So yeah, so I think it's the two of us together on stage. And it's very weird because like we I think we look a little bit like the same.
Yeah, everybody always wants to know if we're sisters. It's really we like to play around with that for sure.
Mm. So just with the time that we have left, I want to bring it back to Miriam and ask if, because there's a lot of there's a lot in the program for the festival this year. There's some events that are happening. There's an opening tonight and there's workshops that are, you know, accommodating. Mm-hmm. So are there anything that you'd like to tell, you know, our listeners, especially maybe the opening tonight, what's happening with that?
Yeah, actually, there is going to be dance at the opening. It wasn't part of the program originally, but the opening tonight is it's the launch of the festival, so I'll be presenting the festival and talking about it. But it's also the launch of a anthology of feminist zombie stories, and that also it's got a silk screened cover. It's quite a beautiful book, and I'm halfway through it, and it's not what you expect. Again, very eclectic and varied points of view. And it's kind of part of, it's in the line of, you know, the whole kind of zombie thing right now. I mean, I still have these old notions of zombie, the imagery of zombie as like consumer culture, gone, dead, you know. But in fact, there's a whole kind of feminist zombie and a resistance movement zombie association going on. So zombies are now more... outsiders in whatever in people's heads. So and this is very much, the book is like that, and the launch will be like that. There'll be readings, there'll be a dance performance that's inspired by zombie as outsider activist, and Alexis O'Hara is gonna do a little performance too with one of the stories from the book, and there's gonna be a video. And most of this is done by a gang of French lesbian feminist activists who are here exploring Montreal for a month. They came for a Radical Queer Semaine and Edgy Women Festival. They're here with funding by the OFQJ for Office Québécois pour la Jeunesse Franco-Québécois. And they're here to explore art activism. So I think that's really interesting.
Cool.
I know. And actually, this edition is like total French takeover, because I have Gaëlle Bourges also. There are five members of their company, also funded by the OFQJ. The coordinator this year is a stagiaire from France. She's amazing. She's volunteering at Studio 303 for 5 months.
Wow.
And then we even have another volunteer who came over from France for a month. So it's just, it's mad. So there's the launch tonight, and then there are professional level workshops, which I don't usually talk about, but seeing as this is a dance show, I probably should. And they are with Gaëlle Bourges from Je Baise Des Yeux. She's teaching body mind centering. Mm. And then Antonia Livingston, who has participated many times at Edgy Women, who's an incredible Canadian artist, but we don't see her very often here. She lives mostly and performs mostly in Europe. And she's coming to teach a kind of a queer performance workshop called On Orientations. And I think that's going to be really exciting. And like I said, we have an edgy hockey match as well, which is another experiment towards next year. And then the blog. I really want everyone to go on the blog. And we've got also feminist conferences in collaboration with Université Populaire Montreal. So all of it's on the website at edgywomen.ca. And I hope people come to everything and talk about everything.
Yeah, it's an incredibly rich festival. There's so much happening. There's so many ideas in there. And yeah, so I would highly recommend checking out some of these shows. They look incredible. I feel like I want to miss work just so I can go, because I have worked a few nights and I'm like, I can't go, but I'm gonna find a way. Anyways, so thank you so much, you guys, for coming, and I hope that, you know, the festival will go amazingly, which it will. Yeah, we're just gonna, is there anything else to add, Allison, before we take a short break?
No, I think we're good to go. So, yeah, check out Edgy Women Festival. It's running until April 1st. We've been talking to Holly, Andrian, and Miriam from the Edgy Women Festival, and we'll see you in a couple minutes. Welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to Movement Museum, and it is 2:42. I'm Allison Burns, and I'm here with Jen Doan, and our guests have left the studio now. And I just wanted to remind you, while I have your attention, hopefully, that we are up and running on our blog at movement-museum.blogspot.com. And you can always get old episodes there, and sometimes we do extra special posts of other things happening in the city. So go check it out. You can also download us off of iTunes. So, you know, you can walk around and listen to the old episodes of the show. Oh, and one other announcement. It's actually Katie Bélanger's birthday, who is one of our co-hosts today. And that's why she's not here. She's going off to pamper herself elsewhere in the city, which is fair. She deserves a day off. So there you go. So we've got some time left in our show, and what we're going to do now is go through some of the reviews that we've neglected for a while there. The first review I'm going to start with is Orlando, because this production is actually still playing. It's choreographed by Deborah Dunn and her company Trial and Eros, and it's produced by Agora de la Danse. It's running from yesterday, March 14th, to the 16th at 8 p.m. and March 17th at 4. So if you like what you hear, you can still go out and catch it. So Deborah Dunn is a big name in contemporary dance in Montreal. And this work, actually, I didn't know this going into it, but now that I read all the information afterwards, I understand now that it's based on the book written by Virginia Woolf called Orlando, which is, again, I haven't read the book, but it's basically the story of kind of like an androgynous person living over a span of 400 years. And kind of the struggles and whatnot with that. It is theatrical in the way that there's minimal dialogue. There's a lot of facial expression and gesture and prop manipulation and costuming, but it is a movement heavy work that concentrates a lot on dance to tell the story. The piece starts, like, I think in the Victorian age, and there's like these elaborate costumes, these large dresses with the big hips, not hips necessarily, but you know what I mean, with the cage underneath the dress. The company of performers is we have Natalie Zoe Gold, Audrey Justo, Sarah Hanley, Alexandre Parteneau, Nicholas Pantry, and Nancy Rivest are the interprets of the evening. And I want to put a shout out to Alexandre, who just blew me away as one of the strongest performers in terms of facial expression and communication through that. It was humorous. There are a lot of moments in the show that inspired laughter from the audience. And I can see why in a lot of moments. I think in a lot of other moments, it was kind of an inside joke with people who are aware of Orlando, where I don't fall into that category, but they're you know, a little, not quite slapstick, but very physical humor. And you can interpret that regardless of knowing the base of inspiration. And he was very strong in that regard, and also had a very fluid spine. It was very lovely to watch. Also, the lead, kind of the main character, I believe it was Natalie, but don't hold me to that. I couldn't tell from the bio images, but she was also very strong, very captivating, just a very nice mover. And, you know, obviously being the star of the show, you can understand how she got there. So they move through several different costumes, and it's evident a little bit further into the piece, I would say. It shows about an hour long, maybe
2/3 of the way into the piece, I understood the changing of time and how things were evolving. I started to see like kind of salsa social dancing, and it starts with like Victorian era dancing, and then you see like a contemporary dance in quotations with like a chair, and then you see the introduction of audience participation. So again, this is kind of the plot that I stuck to, being unaware of the plot of Orlando. I kind of created my own. I also saw a lot of like theatrical and maybe even Shakespearean references. I mean, the initial image, you see a skull hanging from the ceiling, and you're like, oh my God, is Shakespeare in it? Like, that's the first place your head goes. But I also, and then going off of that theme, I saw Midsummer's Night Dream. I saw Twelfth Night, and just piecing things together. But again, I would be really interested in another response from somebody who's actually read Orlando or is more aware of it, and hear what they have to say about it. Because I think the majority of the audience, not the majority, but the ones who were laughing the most, I think they probably knew exactly what was happening. Mm. So that's curious. But great use of theatrics and creating space and atmosphere. The movement itself was very nice, although simplistic in its structure. I think the point definitely was, at the beginning, to create that simplistic structure when you were dealing with partner work and very old partner work, but I felt that that didn't evolve throughout the work, and it maintained kind of, especially in spatial patterns, very simplistic proposition. Yeah, and oh, the sound is very interesting. There's actually a beautiful soundtrack throughout, and mics that are suspended from the ceiling. And I've seen this before recently, but they pick up the sound that the performers are making, and it amplifies and adjusts it. So again, back to this first image, there's a skull, and our main character, she's whipping a stick around, and the sound goes into the mic, and it comes out echoed, and it goes whoo, whoo, whoo. So very interesting. They use that every once in a while throughout the piece. They take advantage of those mics amplifying and distorting the sound in real time. If you've read Orlando, or if this sounds interesting to you, go check it out. It's being presented by Agora. It's playing until Sunday. And let me know what you thought. Please.
Awesome. I went to see Love, Death, Devil, the piece, which was playing at La Chapelle last weekend.
Yes, and we had the joy of talking to the choreographer of
that
production. Yeah,
Benjay Ripe. He came in on Thursday, and I went to see it on the opening night. So just to start, like, just to kind of describe the piece, there were 6 dancers. The company is Benjay Ripe Compagnie, and they're based out of Dusseldorf. There were 6 dancers, 3 male, 3 female. And the music throughout the work was like this very dramatic, classical, baroque kind of music. And then sometimes a little interjected with a little bit of just like, you know, minimal soundscape. The lighting was pretty minimal. And then the setup of the stage was interesting. There were like mic stands around the front, the downstage of the stage, and at the back in the very left hand corner, the left, was like this big statue of like a moose, and then on the other side behind was this big black table with chairs in which the dancers would come and sit down every now and then and just be sitting and observing the dancers on the stage. The piece was really, it's funny because when I went to sit down and the piece started, it didn't get me right away. It was kind of like, okay, okay, okay. And as the work progressed, it continually drew me in more and more. And it just became like, you know, this array of scenes and ideas that would come in and out. And there's something about the piece that was like this painting. It was like a kinetic painting. And really like lots of images and lots of, you know, sound and costuming and use of props. And so to me, I felt like it was like a painting, and actually reminded us of a painting. I went with a friend of a triptych painting by Hieronymus Bosch, which was a painting called The Garden of Delights, and where the triptych painting is like one panel is one panel is this the images of you know, perfection, innocence, and then the middle panel is like the indulgence of you know, all the luxury and the pleasures of humanity, and then in the last panel is like the hell of humanity, where all the sins and all the struggles and the pain like comes forth. And in a way, this piece kind of represented that. You know, there was a lot of aggression, and it was very abrasive at times, and then there were times where it was just really funny, and then it was really sad, and it was just like a mix of emotions that would come in and out of the piece. And I really liked the way that, I don't feel that it was highly choreographed in a conventional sense. That was something that was very interesting about Ben's work, was this wasn't choreographed in a conventional sense, but yet it was very strategically and highly composed, in a way that everything, the way everything in the movement and the dancers and the props were shifting and transitioning, it was very well done. And not a lot of choreography in a sense of dancing choreography, but just movement and bodies in space and in relation to one another. So it was just, it was very different.
Does it fall under the category for you of like the danse theater, like kind of European
definitely
work? Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, it definitely did. The one thing that was just very, like, very captivating was he used these masks. They were probably just, like, very simple kind of plastic masks of animals. And there were, like, there was a monkey, there were the sheep and goat, and what else was there? A bunch of, you know, just, like, what would you call them? Like, grazing animals. And the performers would come out in these masks, and they would do these, you know, just this crazy stuff. But the very like most captivating part for me was when this tall lean dancer came out with the monkey mask on, and she had this whole solo section herself. It was just so haunting and beautiful, and strangely this very elegant, just this elegant moment. And it was just weird because when the other dancers had the different mask on, like the sheep and the goat and the deer, there's a strange like cutoff, you know, where like it just the head of the animal, it doesn't suit the body of the human. But when this solo came out with the dancer with the monkey mask on, it was just so haunting because the monkey face is just so much more similar to our human face. So she had this incredible solo that came out, and it was just, like I was saying, beautiful and haunting at the same time. Just, I loved how they drooled on stage. There were moments where they would just drool on the stage.
Watching the promo video and hearing that abrasive music and seeing these distorted bodies with animal heads, this is the only perspective I have on the work. So it's interesting and nice to hear that there was a balance it traveled. It didn't stay abrasive the entire time.
No, it didn't. Although it was very abrasive, but it did travel and it allowed like a nice release from it. But very intense. Like, I know Ben was saying this himself. Like, his work is not accessible.
Yeah, he was saying it's very challenging.
It's very challenging. It is. And I just wanted to say one last thing. I loved how the piece ended, because there seems like a very subtle juxtaposition throughout the work. Like, the costumes at one point were very contemporary and beautiful and very couture almost. And then they had, like, these Baroque-like costumes later on, and they come out. And the music as well, very, like, classical, intense, and then like this, a bit of like this contemporary kind of soundscape. And the ending was interesting because they ended and it was, everyone started clapping, and then the lights came on, and all of a sudden they went into this like really high energy dance choreography, and they were just like happy and joyous, and it was like synchronized, which was like very interesting. And so the ending was super fun because the piece is so intense the whole time, and then they ended it off on a high note. You're
it's
just
like a little sorbet.
Yeah. So yeah, just overall like unexpected, and just, I think he just did a really great job. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Although I was saying, at first I was like, oh, and then it really started to draw me in.
So he's somebody to look out for if he comes back to
Definitely,
Canada.
Definitely, he is someone to look out for. He's really making it big around in Europe and in Asia. So,
and if you want to hear about what he has to say about his piece, check out last week's episode of Movement Museum when we got to interview him. So Love... What? Sorry, one more time.
Love...
Death Devil.
Yes, Love Death Devil. The Peace.
The Peace. All right, so that's it for us here on Movement Museum.
So it's almost 3 o'clock, so we're going to say goodbye. My name is Allison Burns, and Jen Doan is my co-host. Check us out at movement-museum.blogspot.com, where you can listen to all our old episodes and whatnot and get some information on what's going on in dance in Montreal. And once again, happy birthday to Katie Benanger, our co-host, who is not with us today.
Happy birthday, Katie.
And we're just going to play you out with this track from Orlando, which was Deborah Dunn's piece playing this week at Agora.